Welcome to Season 2 of Assessment in Focus, the podcast from Inspira, where we invite our guests to share their insights on assessment transformation, innovation, and enhancement. I'm delighted on this episode to be joined by Professor Sam Brenton, who is Director of Lifelong Learning at the University of London. Sam is a senior leader in higher education and lifelong learning at the university, where he works at the intersection of education, innovation, and institutional strategy. So a perfect guest for this podcast. With more than two decades of experience in online and transnational education, he's played a leading role in shaping new models of accessible, flexible learning designed to widen participation and meet the needs of learners across different stages of their life and career. His current work focuses on rethinking how universities can open access to high-quality education through stackable lifelong learning models and more flexible routes into and through higher education. Alongside his leadership roles, Sam is recognized as a thought leader in the future of higher education, particularly in relation to access, innovation, and the evolving relationships between universities, technology, and social change. Sam, thank you very much for joining us on the podcast.
Ishan, it's a great pleasure to be with you.
Thank you. My first question is one where I think lots of people would like to be in the position to do this. And through, I'm sure we'll hear about it, the micro-credential and lifelong learning opportunities at the University of London, you have had this opportunity. And it is, if we were designing assessments from scratch today, what should we stop doing first?
Well, personally, I think I would stop treating learning and assessment as so separate. As you've alluded, at the moment I'm working on developing lifelong learning frameworks and rethinking the student journey through the eyes of lifelong learners. And once you do that and you make certain design changes around the learning, you naturally think deeply about assessment and the changes you need to make about assessment. And there are many of those. We can get into some of them, I'm sure. But my sense is that although we have learning outcomes, we have constructive alignment, we have multiple part assessments, so on and so forth, we still inherently, culturally, think of them as different things that happen at different times. That you do your learning and then you do your assessment, which verifies that learning. And I just think for a host of reasons, AI being one, of course, that actually, you know, we've known for a long time that assessment drives learning behavior.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Assessment, of course, is actually a learning act in itself. And so if you had a kind of blank slate, thinking from first principles about the learning and the assessment, I think the two would naturally move much closer together.
Do you have examples of ways in which people could be doing this now? Because we don't all have the luxury of designing assessments from scratch. So if people are trying to make their assessments better, for want of a better term, what kind of activities could or should they be doing in order to, well, A, do it, but B, verify they're getting it right?
Oh, I always find myself caught between a rock and a hard place on these sorts of things. And I'm very wary of, there's a lot in higher education about, you know, how we ought to be doing things in our work. And actually, people are constrained chiefly by time pressure mm-hmm. on their labor. Mm-hmm. So I'm quite wary about it. I also feel like I'm sort of served two masters in a way, in that there's a lot of sort of lofty idealistic stuff that we could say about using learners' reflections on their learning as part of the assessment, making assessment iterative, so on and so forth, the boundaries between formative and summative blurring, competency-based assessment, which I'm really interested in, and all that. But in the reality of most people's working lives, those are quite hard things to do. I also, whenever we start having those sorts of conversations, I think, yes, but, at the University of London, we have a mostly international student body, about 1,000 students. we have a very large undergraduate law course with about 15,000 students. Now, if you're doing assessment on an undergraduate LLB in Pakistan, it has to be a time-based examination in a room because it's regulated.
Yes.
Well, actually, you're constrained. You can't do that. If you are learning to be a dentist, there better be some OSCEs. Actually, a wonderful form of assessment. And actually, sometimes when I think about how I imagine creative thought about assessment being, the OSCE is a great example because you are observing people doing, and the doing is the assessment.
Yeah.
I'm conscious that often colleagues don't have that kind of freedom of design.
Does that lack of freedom of design come from a phrase I think I've ended up using in most of the episodes of this podcast, so why not again? I think the higher educational equivalent of nobody got into trouble for buying IBM is walking into an exam administration office and saying, I want a 3-hour exam, please. Yes. Everyone will say, sure, I know how to do this.
Yes.
Do we need to be enabling both resource-wise, but also in terms of technology and thinking, the enablers of assessment, the administrators, in the same way as we try to get academics rethinking it, to give them the space to be able to go in and say, I've got this thing I want to do, and it not to be, but I don't have a methodology for that.
Yes. And of course, there are examples of that. I'm thinking about the ungrading movement over in the States. I don't know if that is now, but for a while that really gathered pace, and it was back in ideas about social justice and equity and all that. And that was interesting. And presumably in that there were educators who were making choices, empowered as the lecturer of their course. So, you know, where those conditions exist, that's fine and that's great. And then there's, you know, sort of growing literature on how all that goes.
Yeah, I'm off to this will date when the podcast is. We're recording this at the start of June 2026. I'm off to the AHE conference in a couple of weeks' time. I've not been for a couple of years. And what I'm hoping to see this time round is people saying, I'm doing this thing in assessment, and so are more people at my university. Because often when you see these great ideas, they are, well, it's just me, and you know, I haven't managed to get past it. And I want to metaphorically hug them and say, how can we all help you make sure we get it, you know, past there? Is it just resources? Is it policy? Is it our own thinking? Is it a worriedness about how people might react, students and the rest of the academic body? It's probably all of them. But where do you see potentially the reluctance, even where there is scope to change?
I guess it's a mix of all those things. I think policy is often blamed unfairly. I think we sometimes imagine walls that aren't always there. And as we know, custom and practice is a very strong cultural force in universities as well as other parts of life. At the same time, you know, there is a lot of innovation. I think for me, thinking about lifelong learning, it's really important that to me that if you're a lifelong learner, you can study when you want, at the pace you want, and the learning should be structured so that you are supported in being able to evidence that you've met the learning outcomes at hand. Basic stuff. But if you're studying at your own pace and you join when you want, it's important that you're able to take the assessment when you're ready. Which means that you need assessments which are either rolling or dynamic or generated on the fly in some way. So it removes, it means you don't necessarily have cohort-based assessment. You don't have time-based assessment in the same way. And that means, and so actually implementing that means, at times, changing institutional policy. It means changing operational processes, because there are human beings who service exam boards, etc. And indeed, it means looking at technology systems that will support the way that you want to assess. And there's friction in all those areas whenever you're doing something novel. So actually, you know, the pedagogy is one thing, but all those other things do come into play naturally.
To what extent do you think we need to help the entire community? So students, academics, professional staff, and actually I'm thinking about the wider world, understand that cohort-based assessment isn't the only way of doing it. I know that there is, within all of those areas, within all of those groups, there's a concern of, well, is there still integrity if you're doing a different assessment? You know, forgetting about the fact that this year's A-level history paper looks different to last year's paper, we know how to standardize things. Is there a bit of a sort of wider PR job of getting people to understand that this is still valid assessment, actually benefits lots of people, or do you think actually that's not another factor we have to worry about? People are already there.
It's not necessarily that people are already there, but I'm quite wary of evangelizing as well. I think, you know, what I'm trying to do and what we're trying to do is try something by doing it.
Yes.
And actually it's only by doing things that practice changes over time. I mean, it's obvious to say, but I think, the doing is the thing, I think.
Yeah, well, you say it's obvious to say. I think sometimes people's reticence takes over from the doing. And they either want to do either very small scale and not necessarily know what that actually teaches them at the end. I agree with the, you know, despite it being in my job title, I agree with the evangelizing can be problematic. But there's also, it's realizing, you know, what scale you need to do things on to actually get some valid results. One of the other things I wanted to ask you about, and I've almost sort of trampled on my second question, but I'm still going to ask it. If we really think about the barriers to change, the things that you've already set out a number of things that we could do and what might need to change in order for it to happen. But what kind of habits or systems or policy do you feel really right now need change, or at least if we're not going to mandate how people do things, they at least need to go and examine to see if they are causing a blocker? And you've mentioned policy, and I think we know that that can be slow, but are there other areas that you think really are now problems?
Well, look, we've designed our higher education system around a kind of industrial era logic of cohorts, semesters, pushing people through in a straight line to a defined destination and then out into their careers as well. Learning basically was. We are saying as a sector, as a government, and indeed in HE systems around the world, that that needs to change because the world around us has changed. So if that changes for the learning, then you need an assessment, a range of assessments that actually help for that kind of learning to succeed. And so bolting on kind of industrial era logic assessment onto a fluid lifelong learning framework just won't work because the mismatch between the learning and the assessment is too great. So for those reasons, I'm really interested in things like competency-based assessment. I'm interested in challenging the way we think about resets and retakes. When you do your driving test, of course, each assessment is different because every driver and every road every minute of the day is different. It is a time-based test and you do get an outcome. But if you don't pass, the act of doing the test would have been part of your learning. And you do the same test next time, the conditions are different because you're the same person on a different day, the roads are different, etc., etc. But you get the chance to try again. And I think in the UK higher education system, there are varying degrees of acceptability about that kind of assessment where the doing is the assessment, the learning assessment. And unfortunately, I think as you go up the rankings and into the research-led universities, there's still this idea that that that's where is preserved a gold standard of assessment. And, you know, until very recently, it was double blind marking, this, that. Now, with AI coming in, I think there's a danger that that distinction actually sharpens. You get one group saying, right, we're rushing back to sit you down in the ivory tower and examine you, because that's, we have to. And on the other, you've got a kind of Wild West. Actually, you get a lot of innovation in that Wild West. Things settle down. I'm not sure that's answered your question or where your question is pointed.
But... No, I think it has, because I think it's showing us that the barriers are different at different institutions. Some of that is custom and practice. And I smiled when you said that earlier, because as someone who's been a lawyer and an academic, custom and practice has been quite a large part of my life. But it is that I agree with the idea that we're going to end up potentially in this space of very, very traditional assessments. And I almost said examinations, but that's probably what we're looking at. And a very interesting space. The traditional examination bit, one of the propositions that I set out at a number of keynotes is we are the problem. The people in higher education are good at examinations, or were good at examinations when they did them. And so they propagate further closed book examinations. I've got a question on AI, which I'm going to come to, but just slightly foreshadowing it. Where do you see the role of examinations in the future? I mean, I did a keynote at the University of London where I wanted to get rid of all of them, which was deliberately provocative. But Sam, where do you think they play a role, if any, in the future of assessment?
I have sympathy with the anti-exam strain of thinking. My background is mostly in online education, where it's often not an appropriate or practical form of assessment. And where, you know, we've got a long experience of proctoring now through with you, you know, over 1,000 proctored exams or something during COVID very rapidly. Now, in one sense, that kept the lights on, because without assessment, we're not a university. So on the one hand, it's very easy to see the flaws with that form of assessment. But on the other, it's absolutely existential. And as I say, the example of the laws LLB, you know, the examination will have a way to run yet. But yeah, is it a necessary evil? It's a requirement. I do worry about it and wonder about it, you know, having been one of those students who was suited to it myself. But, you know, from an administrative perspective, it's probably going to be necessary for a while longer. I mean, I remember people saying for a long time, you know, the degree is dead, we're unbundling the degree. You know, I think there's a risk we do something similar around examinations, and I think they've got a while to roll yet. But I certainly think for lifelong learners at scale, who are of all ages, in all locations, studying at different times, it's fundamentally an inappropriate form of assessment.
I mean, in the same way, my dislike of examinations comes from it not being the best way to assess me. So I get that there's my own personal bias in it. I think that, as you say, there are situations in which it's not appropriate, which I think opens the door to us thinking about it, even in the ones where it is appropriate, are we using it in the right way? I can quite accept that there is some bundle of knowledge or the curriculum or the learning outcomes that we have, which does require, as now, you know, we're seeing from Australia, secure assessment as a concept. I'm completely behind that. I think it doesn't have to be examinations. You can have secure in other modes too. It doesn't have to be writing. It doesn't have to be the only way we record things. I'm hoping that our experience of online, and almost the world's experience of online 6 years ago, gives us that catalyst for thinking, okay, we don't have to bin it, but are we using it in the right way? As we think about things, are we using it in the right way? My next question is, how is AI going to transform or undermine, or somewhere in between, education? And this is a question I've asked everyone in this season of the podcast. I will say that, of course, everyone said it's a combination of the two. So, Sam, I'm looking for your version of it, please. Where do you see it?
Well, I suppose my version of saying it's a combination of the two is saying that it will do the undermining first and then the transforming. And we're probably in the undermining now. It certainly seems that way. There's a way round this question. I mean, I suppose the obvious answer is it's going to undermine it and transform it by at a stroke making most forms of what we think of as secure assessment unsecure and unreliable. It then undermine it by by creating such a gap between the way people learn, live, work, etc., with AI, and then saying here is a kind of skiff where that's not allowed, and the mismatch between the person and the world and the learning and the assessment mode, the discordance there can't hold it. But the other way around this, I think, is by almost going back in your question tree to thinking about innovation in assessment. You know, I did a master's a long, long time ago by work-based learning. And in that, the learning was the work was the learning, and the assessment was both of them. And the assessment became a process of evidencing both of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always personally found that the most powerful form of assessment I've ever undertaken. And indeed, if you've got assessment like that, doesn't have to be work-based learning, but where you are doing something in a scaffolded way, in a guided way, and you are evidencing what you're doing against the outcomes of the course or whatever, or the skills that you need, then whether or not or how you're using AI to do that just becomes part of how you're using it to do that. And it removes the subterfuge, the mystery, all of that. So I suppose those are the sorts of things that we say when we talk about bringing in authentic assessment as the way around it. I suppose actually it's somewhere in there. The challenge for me is how you do that at scale, for learners all around the world, remotely. You know.
Yeah, I think we're at that point with the usage of AI where there's definitely a need for AI literacy and understanding and beyond, I think almost beyond literacy now to interaction. When I go on LinkedIn and I see all of the posts and then I see as many posts of people bemoaning the use of AI to write posts, I do think to myself, we're bemoaning the posts that we think look obviously AI. The number of people using AI is far greater than the ones you're calling out. It's skillful use of it. It's the, as we look at that sort of overall package of the way in which people learn, the way they're assessed and how that blends, how are we best going to ensure those who have concerns about who's doing the doing are in some way assuaged, not necessarily by saying it all then has to be secure, but how are we going to increase our understanding of what the doing is? Because the doing 30, 40 years ago did not involve the internet. It involved using books. And there's a good question there as to whether use of a book and use of an online resource, but how different are they? What's our modern take on that? How are we going to get people convinced that the doing is actually the doing?
I've lived through one of these revolutions when the internet came along. I'm in my early 50s, and so many of the conversations are similar. And the doom-mongering is similar, and the hype on the other side is similar. And there was a lot of talk then about, you know, what's the value of knowledge if the computer knows it all and you can look it up on the network? And then other people were saying, well, that's good. We should be, you know, we should move beyond knowledge, and it's about constructing meaning through, you know, all that stuff. I think this is a version of that. The internet had a profound effect. Didn't actually shake the foundations of the world and the systems in education, actually, the way we thought it might. But I think that's going on now. So So I'm an optimist about these technologies. The gravest, we're in the kind of trough of disillusionment now. I mean, higher education LinkedIn at the moment is just a big trough of disillusionment. And AI is becoming the scapegoat for a lot of other forces at play, which are real.
Yeah.
But there's no doubt to my mind, just through my own personal experience, that these tools are immensely powerful for learning. And if they're immensely powerful for learning, they are axiomatically powerful for assessment, because assessment and learning are basically the same thing. Assessment's just the public face of your learning, as it were, the demonstration of your learning. And so this is a long way round to your question. I was playing just yesterday with an AI tutoring platform tool that a friend of mine had knocked up. And there are various of these around, but the principle is that you tutor someone through Socratic dialogue with an AI. The neat thing about this is there's no course content to begin with. The conversation just starts.
Okay.
And it was really nicely done. I mean, he's an esteemed professor of AI, so it should be, but it was really nicely done. And the blend of freedom and guardrails as you were moving somewhere that was did, but you felt free as you did so. It's proper personalized adaptive learning. But I did have the thought then that you could actually weave assessment through that, so that at points a dialogic AI tutor could say, I think you've really nailed that last bit. Would you like to save that and park it and push it towards your portfolio of evidence towards the learning outcomes? And you go, yeah, that'd be good. And then your assessment at the end is to look through all that stuff that you've produced through those interactions, then recurate them. This is where the parallel is to the assessment on my old work-based learning degree. Recurate them and then package those up and present those. And actually, you couldn't do any of that without the AI. It's infused, but it's working generatively to help you get to the point where you're able to evidence it and to undertake a process where you can't just go on an LLM and get the right answers. It forces the conversation to be had, and the curation of the assessment artifact is the learning. So things like that would be a way around these problems, and they could work at scale, you see.
Yeah, it gives us the answer to the scale problem, and I'm as fascinated to hear about the experience of using it as I am the conjunction with my dream at level 6, level 7, which for our international audience, final year undergraduate and postgraduate, if you're not in a jurisdiction that uses levels in the same way, is that we are saying to students, here are the learning outcomes. You go away and create what you need in order to demonstrate that you've met them. Yes. The gap for me has always been the assessment literacy. One is the assessment literacy that the student has, but two, you don't know what you don't know. If you've only ever seen closed book exams and 2-week take home papers, how on earth do you know what to create? The use of AI to either forcibly create things for you by suggesting or by saying great work from you, now you can go use that, is potentially the answer to it. Because I love the idea of work-based learning being a much bigger part of what we do, because of that broader applicability into what you do later. Think about the authenticity of people's assessments and that sliding scale of authenticity. Isn't the greatest artifact that you could take away something that you go and use again and again afterwards as your guiding principle for what you do? I know the Bar of England and Wales is seen as this very antiquated place. They've actually had one of the most progressive set of assessments in that it's been vocational since the mid-90s, and that's what I taught on. And I do know I walked away with artifacts that helped me. As we look into the future, if we're having this discussion 5 years' time, and we will, and that's just my way of booking you for another podcast, hopefully sooner than 5 years, but definitely in 5 years' time, what would you hope had genuinely changed over those 5 years in assessment? And what do we need to do in order to get to the Sam Brenton vision of assessment in 5 years' time?
I don't have one. I do have a vision of, I do hope that as a sector, lifelong learning works, because we've been talking about it for decades. And actually, other parts of the world are moving ahead much more quickly than we are. And some of the reasons why we're not are to do with kind of sector we are, but also the kind of country we are. And, you know, perceived worth, class structures, all that. And my hope is that in 5 years' time, we've made a start on cracking that, finally. Because I think it will really help with access to education and social mobility. And it will, that will help the university sector by, through differentiation, choice, a real story to tell, you know, all those things that we're stuck in at the moment. So I hope that started to budge. And if that does start to budge, has started to budge in 5 years, I think that will also lead to a kind of Cambrian explosion of innovation around assessment. I don't know what that will look like yet, because it hasn't happened yet. But I hope that lifelong learning does make an impact and does mean that for assessment. And through doing that with assessment, that it also gets us past this, I think at this point, really unhealthy kind of paralysis around doing the same old things, but knowing that they're dead.
Yeah. Well, I know that people listening to this or watching this, depending on how you're consuming the podcast, will want to know more about what the University of London is doing in this space. So there will be a link. If you're looking at this now, you should see a link underneath the podcast to the micro-credentials suite, as it's currently called, at the University of London. Sam, thank you very much for joining me today. This, as always with all of our discussions, this has been fascinating. I'm glad we've had an opportunity to record one of them so other people can hear it. So thank you very much for your time. And I also want to thank our listeners. If you found this useful, please like, subscribe, share. If you want to leave a review, then please do. I always appreciate reading them when people do. And yeah, I just want to thank you again, Sam, for appearing on the podcast.
It's been a blast. Thanks, Isha.
Thank you. Assessment in Focus is brought to you by Inspira, providing flexible assessment with integrity. I've been Ishan Kolhatkar, and I will see you next time.